So, well, we didn't get very far, so I think maybe we went through the preface, actually. Shall we just start off the introduction?
Yes, please, please.
Okay. So, introduction, Sat Kriya Sara Dipika, Gopal Bhatti Goswami.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Chandraya Namaha. Ooh. I think maybe I'll just read the English.
Yeah, just read the English. Don't worry about the Sanskrit.
Okay. Offering obeisances to Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, who is worshipped by the whole world, who is the controller of the universe, who is situated in supreme bliss, and who is the bestower of the desired goal to the unalloyed devotees. I, Gopal Bhatta, receiving the order from saintly exalted devotees, present a manual on Vedic Sangskaras called Sat Kriya Sara Dipika.
Yes.
By this.
So it's, okay, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. Continue.
Okay. By this, the householders within the Varnashrama system, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and those outside the Varnashrama system, Chandalas, Malechas, Yavanas, etc., can maintain the principles of Vaishnava teachings. In presenting this, I have always kept in mind the supreme position of devotional service.
Okay, so then in here, when he's respecting Krishna, pointing out his position, and you see is that those first points when they talk about how he's the supreme and, you know, the topmost and these, you see it's the same kind of aspects that the Purusha Shukta is talking about. So you're always going to, it's always that same kind of principle. But then you see is here, by the grace of the Acharyas, then following, you know, in the mood, the Srimad Bhagavatam, then you're always bringing out the same aspects, but in relationship to the Lord and the devotees. So you take about the supreme happiness, the supreme bliss, that Ananda aspect, because that's the uniqueness of the personal form, is that the Bhagavan aspect is that of Ananda, because it has that complete aspect of Ananda. And so that interaction with the devotees, then that has the most wonderful, sweet taste. So that's the point. So see, Purusha Shukta is talking about that, but in a form that is, you know, has the Vedic, using the Vedic grammar, the Vedic kind of way of speaking, the Vedic vocabulary, you know, the Vedic grammar, all those different aspects will bring out that these things are being expressed, but they're being expressed through that medium, just like Vedanta Sutra is being expressed through logic. But it's still, its purpose is bringing that out. But here then, from following in the line of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our main presentation, as given by Narad Muni, that no, you directly talk about Bhagavan and his, and the devotion of his devotees and their relationship with him, based on that affection, because that then will attract living entities and won't bewilder them. You know, but it has to be also, as Gopal Bhatta Goswami said, you know, coming into the line of authority. He's been instructed by authority to write this book. And so it's not that we just make up our own process, because otherwise, so to keep people from going into the Sahajya, you know, I mean, going into the smart aspect and the rules is that you have to know is it's about Krishna, the person. So all these rituals and all these understandings have a hierarchy that go up to then understanding pure devotion to Bhagavan. At the same time, as it's coming by higher authority and coming down through the parampara. So it's not up to us to just make our own thing. So like Sahaji is just me and God and whatever I feel like. It's like the Protestant religion. It's just whatever I feel like. It's not based on the scriptures. It's just how you feel. So it's all the kind of a Sahajya kind of thing. So one has to be very, very careful about that. Then you see the Acharyas have requested him to do this means it's something important. So then establishing the samskars is something that's seen, deemed as important by his authority. So that means Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. They have given this direction, because otherwise, you know, it won't be otherwise. And so he has they have authorized this. So this idea that, oh, it's samskara, it's ritual, it's not for us, that's not Rupa and Sanatan Goswami's or Gopal Bhatta Goswami's opinion. And we see that in the preface and that, or foreword, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that this is then this is what has been given by Gopal Bhatta Goswami under the order of the Acharyas. So this is what is used by the Vaishnavas. So this whole thing is, oh, you know, we chant, we don't care. But the point is he's saying those who are working with the Rupa Varnashram. So the point is if you're conditioned, you're working within Varnashram. You may be doing it in a scientific way or not. Only if you're beyond conditioning, you're actually on the liberated platform, you don't have to work according to the Varnashram. But at the same time, taking the mood of a Madhyama where you're preaching, you would naturally take a position within this and then function. So there's no real way around it. And that's Daiva Varnashram. That's not just the ordinary Varnashram, which is, you know, a pious religious situation and actions in which you yourself can personally advance and cooperate with others so that they can advance and the total group effort can even make a better situation for each individual advancing. So we see is that it's an important element because it purifies the living entity. You can say, oh, but we chant Hare Krishna. That baby's chanting? You know, the baby when he's in the womb and unconscious for 7 months, he's chanting? He's fully absorbed in Krishna? You know, the point is maybe you're chanting. But then the point is if you're chanting, what's the need of the kids? Right? We're just chanting. We don't need anything else. So we don't need kids. We don't need a house. We don't need money. We just sit under a tree. So therefore, because these things are there, that's why these conditioned natures are there. That's why then how to purify our existence. So it's regulated by the Pancharatra. And then we see it has these occasional purification elements given by the Veda itself. And so that will be the samskaras, you know. So it's not, this is not just something, oh, this is for the smartas. No, this is given by Rupa and Sanatan for all the devotees. And it mentions here, it can say, oh, but you know, but we're from the West. It doesn't matter to us. He said, even those outside Varnashram, the Mlechas and Yavanas, that they've taken up devotional service, it still applies to them. Maybe they don't perform the sacrifice. You get someone who is able to perform these brahminical activities and all that. And they do the, you know, the chant the mantras and do the yajna for you. But the point is they're still applied. Okay, please.
Actually, I have a question, if that's all right.
Yes, please. Yes.
So since you mentioned how this is sort of following a similar way that the Purusha Shukta did, I've wondered for a while when reading the different prayers that are offered to Krishna in the Bhagavatam, they always seem right to follow a very similar format. And I was wondering if any of the Acharyas ever like presented the anatomy of a prayer, pretty much.
That I'm not. Well, I mean, you do have the aspect means from what I know of the Narottam Das Thakur as explained, unless that's explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that you have three kinds of prayers. And you see is that you have, you know, you have the Prarthana, you have the Lalasamayi, and the Dainya Bodhika. So, you know, generally when you say means you have all the aspects generally in a prayer, but means say the Dainya Bodhika, well, that will be that I am unqualified, right? Mm. That's going to be the emphasis, the focus on that. But it's a particular mood. So it may be part of a bigger prayer, but, or it can be the prayers are focusing on that aspect. But in any case, you're talking about how we are not up to the standard and so that Lord will kindly be merciful to us. Then you have the Prarthana will be a prayer about the Lord, the glories of the Lord. So that can be about name, form, qualities, pastimes, anything, but it's about the glories of the Lord in that position. Then you have the Lalasamayi means within those glories of the Lord. And despite our fallen position, still we would like to be able to take part as a servant of the servant of the servant in the Lord's pastime. So that may be more generic, or it may be more specific. So from what I understand, this is what's been defined by the acharyas and the prayers. So you see, when you're dealing with demigods, they're going to talk more about the creation and all that, because that's their field. That's what they deal with. So they're naturally going to be, their Krishna consciousness is going to be seeing the Lord in that capacity, because by tendency, they're neophyte devotees. And so as neophyte devotees that have, you know, a material desire, or that, you know, that to deal with the material energy, they're comfortable with it. But at the same time, it's that devotion and dedication to the Lord, then that means the devotee in his next life can take birth as a demigod. And in this way, assist the Lord in the pastimes of the, you know, creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. And so in that way, then they can become more and more advanced in Krishna consciousness. And then from there, they can then come back and take birth in religious families, or, you know, these kind of wealthy families, you know, some nicely situated families, in which now they have the opportunity to continue that. So they're generally going to be talking more about the glories of the Lord, and specifically generally within his greatness, you know, creation, how he's beyond the creation, those aspects. So it'll take on more like that flavor, like the presentation, like the Purusha Shukta, like that. And when you see that those who are associates, you know, like let's say prayers in Dwarka by Vasudev or Uddhava or these other personalities, then they're going to have that aspect, because there is the touch of majesty there. But then from that aspect of majesty, then it's going to go into, you know, just kind of the glories of his pastimes and how he deals with the devotees. So then you're going to see more, a little bit more of that aspect of sweetness in that. And then you see when, you know, the gopis are offering prayers and this and that, then it'll basically be about his relationship with the devotees and their interaction, and that kind of sweetness and that kind of element of rasa. You know, is that?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So you're going to see, that's why you see, is they all kind of have similar kind of structure, because you're going to be glorifying the Lord. You're going to be talking, depending upon what it is, his transcendental position or how he's controlling, or, you know, everything. He's the Lord of everything. So that kind of aspect is going is always going to remain. But then it's just how much that takes up. And then, you know, one's position, how one's not so qualified, how much that'll take up. And then how one wants to, you know, something to obtain, you know, from that. And so we see someone who attains something in, you know, material benefits, or someone to explain, you know, some, you know, liberation from this, and someone the pure bhakti, and then what form is that pure bhakti? So you'll see is that these aspects are always there. And so the demigods will be more like the Purusha Shukta, kind of that, like, little bit more of that Vedic kind of aspect like that. You know, others, it'll be more, a little bit more on the poetics, where it will be a little bit more, the flavor will be maybe not as formal, so maybe more formal, less formal, like that. But but basically that's what you get.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm sorry. Yes,
go ahead.
Anupanuga Paramartic Vidyapit has something to say.
Actually, also in the prayers, we see that the demigods and other people in official position, they mainly focus on the Lord's official position as the maintainer and the actual doer and everything. But when it comes to devotees, they focus on the qualities of Bhagavan, his mercy, his compassion.
Nice.
So that's what mentioned in Paramatma Sandarbha.
So one's more on the name, form, or just this controlling aspect. He says more Paramatma aspect than Brahman aspect. But here in Bhagavan, then they start talking about, you know, specifically then on the qualities. Okay, that's right. Very nice. That's in Paramatma Sandarbha, you said.
Yeah, that there is a whole discussion on how can Lord be impartial if he's showing his favor to his devotees.
Ah, okay. That's
where then the mercy is like, you know, if he doesn't have show that mercy to those who are surrendered to him, then it becomes a deficiency. So mercy is, it actually shines beyond being just impartial as Paramatma.
Yes, yes. Well, that's also the aspect what the Purusha Shukta is pointing out in that first verse, is that, you know, he's the source of everything. Everything's coming from him. He's the basis of everything. But he's still independent, and he expands beyond this creation by 10 fingers. So he still maintains his independence. So even though, yes, this is the just thing, the balanced thing, and this and that, but he goes beyond that. He's independent. And so that's what makes it the actual real justice, is that it is the relationship between the Lord and the devotees. That's the actual, because the living entity being part and parcel and being personal, the Lord being personal, it's natural you're going to have a relationship with him and that of devotion. And so then that aspect of, if that's not there, it's not actual righteous. It's not actually just. So it's the actual just. They're looking at it, well, people who are not, why aren't they getting the same position? Because they're not actually just. So they're actually, he's equal to everyone, that everybody can interact with him. But depending on when you do, according to that, yours, he interacts. So therefore, how you act and how he responds is always balanced. But where that is on there, so with the devotees, they act on a higher level based on that devotion, so therefore the reciprocation is greater. But this is the thing, this is where you see is the original kind of problem. It's the same formula that people want equal outcome. They don't want, you know, equal opportunity, and that's based on merit. You know, that's going on now. You see in the, you know, the contemporary society and the educational institutions and in all these things, is that before it was, you know, want equal opportunity. Now equal opportunity is there, but they're still not getting the same result. No, we want the same outcome, but that doesn't make any sense at all. You know, somebody puts in 1 minute to do cooking and somebody puts in 5 hours, and you say the outcome's going to be the same. You know, so it doesn't make any, it makes no scientific sense at all. It's just the sentiment that I want what everybody else has. So it's based purely on envy. So that's the thing, is why is it I'm not getting what they're getting? Why is he paying more attention? No, he's reciprocating exactly the same how they put in effort into the interaction with him. He's giving that back. You're putting in very minimal, so therefore you're getting minimal back. Or you're inimical, so then he's reciprocating that. So that balance, that justice is then always what's there. And so then you see, as the devotees go up, then it's going to go from Brahman to Paramatma to Bhagavan. So demigods, as pointed out before, are basically going to be talking about Paramatma. Even in Vaikuntha, they're generally talking about Paramatma. Though there's a touch of the Bhagavan. I mean, they're worshiping Bhagavan, but in that aspect of how he's the, you know, the supreme controller and all that. Well, in Goloka, then it'll be about Bhagavan, and then it'll be, you know, whether it's in majesty or sweetness. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's interesting how the prayers, they'll always go through all of these aspects, but then, like you were mentioning, there will be a focus depending on the devotee. And so I was...
Yes.
When I was going through those prayers, I was thinking that how we pray actually says a lot about us. Because first of all, we should learn from those who are praying properly. And then second of all, we can see where we're coming from by what we're just spontaneously praying for. Are we praying for, you know, material comforts? Are we praying for pure devotional service? You know, that sort of
thing. Yes. Well, that's why it's mentioned in the deity worship, that part of it is, you know, when you offer prayers, you know, in Vandanam, then you have two aspects. You have stuti and stava. One means you're reciting prayers by the great personalities, because you want to follow in their footsteps and learn how to worship Krishna, how they're worshiping. And then the other means your own heartfelt prayers, how you feel according to your realization. And so then both need to be there. Because if you just talk to ones, but then, okay, you've said the prayer, let's say, of Rupa Goswami, but now what's your take on this? Do you want to attain that kind of, you know, follow in the footsteps of that kind of service? Or, you know, you're just cool to say the prayer and that's where it ends, you know? So it's just a matter of that. So, yeah, so if you're taking as your chariot Joan Baez and then quoting her song, then you know you have a little bit more work to do.
Which Joan?
Baez.
I was thinking Osborne. I don't know Baez.
You don't know her?
I don't think so.
I mean, and maybe that was her name also. It could be that was a middle name. That was her stage name. But that was, "Oh Lord, Won't You Buy Me a Mercedes Benz?"
Oh. See, Joan Osborne was the "What If God Was One of Us, Just a Slob Like One of Us."
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's another one. That's.
But okay, yeah. The Mercedes Benz. Okay, yeah, I know the song. I just didn't know the artist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's funny how both of them are Jones.
Yes.
And so this seems to be, I mean, so if you meet someone that names Jones, you know, then be a little careful. They might be a little bit on the more materialistic side, you know, so. Yes. Okay, so does that work? So you'll see as when you go through, if you do all the prayer, you'll see that they're basically talking about the same philosophical points too. It's just which ones they emphasize, which they bring out. You know,
right?
It, you know, depends upon them, their realization, or you know, the situation they're in, or what their service is, and so like that.
Yeah, I remember being surprised a couple times where it's, you know, a pure devotee, but they're still going through these like awe and reverential prayers at first, and then they build up to, you know, that. And so it always surprised me. And then I realized there was a pattern forming. So I just was curious if any of the acharyas actually dissected that.
Yeah. Well, you also see like in a Mangal Acharan, there has to be some glorification of the Lord.
Right.
Then there's going to be after the glorification, then there's going to be, you know, something like we're talking about Mangalacharan, what's the topic that'll be discussed? Then what's the benefit of that topic and studying it, and who's qualified, right? So in here, then you're going to be talking about the glorification of the Lord, and then, you know, what are the great position of the devotees who are interacting with him on that platform of pure devotion, and then how we're not really qualified that, but still anyway, you know, we may be shameless, but it's still what we want anyway.
Sure.
You know, so you see, it's always going to be a similar kind of formula. You know, depending on the particular application, I'm sure that there's slight, you know, variations and like that, but you're basically going to be some glory. Like you see his opening, you know, he opens there. Oh, you know, what is it you said about Krishna Chandra? You know, so that means, you know, Krishna, who's like the moon, you know, so that will mean, you know, who gives the moon gives the, you know, the illumination. It's also the pleasantness, the comfort that it gives, the inspiration, you know, how it controls the mind or attracts the mind, or all these different things could be brought out. But just by saying that in a pleasant way, then, because other things are more important for them than those, some of these technical things, unless they want to bring that out, you know, in the context of rasa. And then he's pointed out how he's been told by the acharyas to do this. Then, you know, this is about the samskars, which are for the upliftment of the devotees who are following the varnashram. In other words, those who are on the Paramahamsa stage, they don't necessarily need to follow it because they're not married and they don't have kids. You know, but if they're taking that of a position of a preacher, and so therefore then they are coming and they are married with kids, then they'll follow the samskars. You know, we see, we can say is, oh, we chant, we're devotees, it doesn't matter to us. Then why is Nanda Baba doing the samskars? Why does Janmastami? Then Rupa Goswami says one of the services you can do is offer the samskars from, you know, appearance up to Upanayanam to Krishna on his appearance day. You know, so the thing is, it's part of our culture. It's just, it's the sad part. I mean, not the sad in the Lord of goodness. And so being in the, you know, that aspect and duties, that's the hard part for those, especially outside Varnashram, because generally those from a background of Varnashram aren't really going to be too much against them unless they've come up to too much modern kind of educational concepts, you know, and views. But otherwise, they don't have a problem because they know the benefits. But those who are from other backgrounds, they may have a problem because the Malechas and Yamanas, because for them, Malecha means you're against the Vedic culture. And so that then means that they're not going to be very interested. So, you know, these other things are just excuses. So when you were a hardcore brahmachari in the temple, you know, in the 70s and 60s, and you said that, okay, it gets by. But then in the 80s and 90s, when you got married and all that, live outside the temple, do whatever you like, and all that, to now still say that, that's stretching it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Thank you.
So now how are we doing on time? Okay. Yeah, another minute. Yeah, so basically, it's just turned. Okay. So then, we can end here and then continue tomorrow.
Okay.
Just, you'll have to read in that.
Okay. Yeah, I can read so tomorrow and Thursday. After that, I'll be in the air. So Friday, I won't be able to read. So maybe someone else will be able to.
Okay. So maybe you can, you know, turn that on, you know, just show. Yeah, work it out with Haldan the Thai Prabhu. And so he knows where the spot is. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shrila Prabhupada, Jai.